Dad Mod's Media Machine presents the Brews with the Dudes podcast.
Oh my God, we're recording. Okay. No, it's just funny. Like I always mean to wear a shirt that isn't black because there's so much dark color behind us.
And we both just wear black.
But I always just end up wearing black colored shirts.
If you open up my closet, it's all black.
Yeah, I almost feel like
two t-shirts.
We need to have a different backdrop. Like I've thought about getting a big green screen like towel.
Well, every time I look in my closet, I'm like, I need to buy more colorful shirts. And what ends up happening is I buy a black shirt that's got like a colored pattern on it.
Oh, right.
So it's still a black t-shirt, right. Though.
I know. I'm pretty similar to that, too. It's kind of ridiculous. Like, I intend to buy a little bit more color. And part of the problem was, like, I bought more color, but then I bought it in V-necks because that's just, like, what was available. And so I sported V-necks for a summer. And it was okay, but I got over the V-neck thing in like a summer.
Oh, yeah. Did you wear khaki shorts with them too?
No, I didn't. I've never done khaki shorts. I can't quite lean that far into being a dad.
Yeah.
It's a little too much.
I have like a pair of cargo shorts.
Do you have any polos?
Yes, but I had to buy them for work.
But do you have khaki shorts and you have a polo?
I have one pair of khaki colored cargo shorts.
So you, wait a minute, okay.
But
just so everybody understands what's happening here. So you're telling me that you have a polo shirt or shirts. You haven't acknowledged how much you have.
Two.
You, oh boy, that's pretty bad, dude. That's not just somebody got that for me.
I went to some work training.
Details, like, details. You have to wear a collared
shirt.
You have khaki shorts.
I have a pair of khaki shorts.
And you fully embrace dad shoes. You've got some disgusting New Balance.
They're Axis, Nikes. Whatever, yeah.
Asus or whatever.
Asus, yeah.
Yeah, dude. I think you're kind of merging into a stereotype.
Maybe.
But you're leaning into that dadness.
I also like to go with the early 2000s pop punk stereotype. And I like to wear my khaki shorts with like a black band t-shirt. And then some like shin high socks with the Vans or the other.
It's a little bit punk rock.
I can't remember what they're called.
But there's an important detail. Do those socks have a black stripe around the top?
No.
They're just straight white socks.
They're just straight white.
Your dad, dude. Oh, dude, you gotta just lean in, I guess. Or you need to swing the opposite direction. Hit that midlife crisis a little early.
Sell the BMW, buy a Corvette, and a timeshare.
Yeah, well, okay, so, okay. Let's. Hey, guys, welcome back to another episode of the Brews with the Dudes podcast. I'm Jake Lindquist.
I'm Donnie Allen.
He's about to buy a Corvette. Okay.
Never.
Corvettes are the baby boomer midlife crisis car.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? But, well, and possibly Gen X, too, because Gen X is obviously, baby boomer, it's far gone. They're beyond midlife.
So what's going to be our generation's midlife crisis car?
Exactly. What's that going to be?
Integras.
Integras? I don't know, man. I feel like a good portion of millennials are not going to be filling that.
Because, see, the Corvette was it was a little bit pricier. You know, so like you can't say like a 350Z or maybe a 370Z would fall into midlife crisis. But I feel by the time we're all in on midlife, the prices on a 370 is going to drop enough to where it's not midlife quality, if that makes sense.
Boy. Yeah. See, I'm having a tough time imagining exactly what is, because Corvettes are pretty universally appreciated by baby boomers. And I think a lot of Gen Xers probably feel the same. Big fans. Okay, so this is called Hudson Hayes. It's by Hop and Barrel. And they had a bunch of fun plays on the words. It was like Minnesconsin or something like that beer, which I don't know. I'm assuming this is like,
this is really good.
Might be in Hudson. Yeah. Mm. Okay, so this is a brewery that's in Hudson. Hudson, Wisconsin.
Fantastic.
Which is basically Minnesota. So that makes a lot of sense.
So midlife crisis for our generation?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the S2000.
Ooh, that's pretty good. It's not universally loved, but it's close.
It's not. It's up there.
Yeah. It might come down
to Skylines.
Well, for sure, if it was accessible.
Oh, GTRs.
Yeah, but GTRs are big bucks.
That's true, but by the time we're in our midlife, I guess even when we're in our midlife crisis stage, they're still going to be kind of big bucks.
Well, I'm among the oldest of our generation.
So
I'm 37, and I think the oldest can be about 40. I think if you're born in 1980, some people put you in the millennials. Kind of depends on the group. I've heard it's like, I've heard it's 1980, 81, 82, 83. I've heard a lot of those being said as like, this is the start of the millennial generation. So I think there's older than me still that are in our generation.
I think so, by a few years.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So what would you draw? So you're near your midlife. I don't know. What would you buy?
Well, okay. So the GTR is really cool. And that's a really good idea. I almost feel like with millennials, that's fairly universal.
Yeah.
Most really appreciate those things. They're gnarly, but they don't make 5-speeds.
That's true.
You know, so Corvettes for manual transmission. So they're not everybody's going to agree on that.
I think part of it too is that midlife crisis needs to be a bigger purchase.
Yeah.
I mean, a Corvette, you can get cheaper ones, but if you're getting a brand new one, you're still spending what, 60 grand?
That's true. 60, 70, 80. Yeah.
So I feel that's part of the rush of the midlife crisis. Like, I went out and I spent all this money and bought a Corvette.
That's true. In midlife, you tend to have more money anyways.
You do, or you want to flaunt it more.
Unless you're millennials. You don't have any fucking money.
That's why I said Integra. It's like...
Yeah, right. That's true. Our midlife crisis cars are going to be like...
$4,000 shit boxes.
Box bodies.
We already have two midlife crisis
two
cars.
240 SXs.
We have a four-door Civic and an FC RX-7.
Yeah, that's true.
That's what we should have named our YouTube channel.
A midlife crisis.
Midlife crisis
garage. Midlife crisis builds. Oh man, that's fucking bad. I don't know, dude. It's really tough to nail that down for millennials because I feel like a Corvette could work because a lot of us are coming around to them.
I don't like Corvettes.
The C6 is a bad motherfucker.
I think they're great cars. I just don't like the stereotype that goes with them. Like, I would rock the crap out of a Corvette. I think they sound good. I think they handle pretty well. The fact that they're still manual gearbox is fantastic. Mm-hmm. They just don't wow me.
Have you driven a Z06?
I've never driven one. Mm. I would love to. I'd drive one.
I mean, they're like 500 horse or something.
There was
like that.
An episode years ago back when Clarkson was still on Top Gear. He drove one, and I remember him saying like, "What made it so good is it." The manual gearbox. He even gave a shout out. He's like, you know, Lamborghini, Ferrari, are you paying attention?
Yeah, exactly. Like
it's still, that's part of the driving experience.
I want to say that might have been a Z06.
I think you're right.
Because they
had
the T56, which they might have in the C5. I can't remember. But they definitely had the T56, which is an amazing transmission. Mm-hmm. And they would have had the LS3, I think, or LS7.
Yeah, I think that whole episode, maybe they were the driving LS7. Modern muscle cars, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
The C7 is... There's a fucking mosquito in here.
The Minnesota National Bird.
Yeah. So okay, what's your favorite generation of... excluding the vintage ones. We're talking like... C3.
Well, the funny thing is,
we can't have C1 or C2 because those are special.
Even the vintage Corvettes don't wow me that much.
The very first gen, you don't like?
They're okay.
Really?
Like the old Stingrays and stuff, they're cool. Don't get me wrong, but they don't.
Yeah.
Again, they don't wow me.
Well, I've worked on a Stingray and I was not that impressed.
Oddly enough, my favorite generation, and I hope I get this right, I think it's the
CO4. The C4 is 1980. Two,
okay, not that then. It was like the really late 90s, early 2000 models.
That would be the C5, I believe.
The C5, okay, yeah. Where they start to look a little bit more modern, but they still have kind of the wavy lines to them.
It's a wedge with pop up headlights.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, the C6 was super close looking.
The four rounds taillights to them.
Yeah, I mean, if I could rely on the internet working nicely out here, where I can try and
look it
up
on my phone if you want to.
That's all right. We gotta show the people.
That's true. I could hold my phone up to the camera.
Hopefully, we're not gonna crash everything.
Yeah, you're thinking right. I think it is the C5.
Okay, so we'll share that with
the
people.
Yeah, I like that generation.
Okay, let's switch on down to this guy. Okay, so that's the, is that the generation we're talking about? So that's C5.
Yes.
Yep. All right.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the C5. I like it in a weird sort of way. It reminds me of the FD Arc 7. Just kind of very smooth body lines to it.
So the C6 has the, yeah, they're non-pop-up headlights. Yeah,
I like the pop-ups.
You do? Okay.
Yeah, I like the C5. The C5 is actually reasonably priced right now.
The C7 is hands down my favorite.
C7 is a very good looking car too.
I like them because they're, I just think they're the prettiest Corvette they ever built. And I know like that's probably, some people are like, you're fucking nuts. The C8 actually looks like a supercar. And it does.
It does.
It's pretty wild looking. But I also think it looks like Chevy ripped off the new NSX. Oh,
absolutely. I think the C7 is... Again, I think the C5 looks the best in my opinion. But the C7 is the last looking Corvette that looks like a Corvette.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. And
the C8 is gorgeous by every means, but it's not a Corvette. It's a... ripped off.
I want one of these.
I can't do that body
style. I want a C4.
I can't do the C4.
Just a mullety, redneck ass looking Corvette.
No thanks.
No, you couldn't get into that?
No, I'm not a drug dealer.
Oh, okay. Well,
even though I drive a drug dealer's car, I'm not a drug dealer.
Let's see if we got a good clapped out one. Nah, it's just pulling up rando shit.
Nothing good.
Yeah, the C4s are cool because people make the carts out of them.
That's true. I forgot about that.
They pop the bodies off and they make like these gnarly little carts that like Cletus does.
If you take off the body of a Corvette, I'd drive the crap out of that.
Yeah, right. A few people have done this. I think Cletus was the first, and he might have done the twin turbo with it or something. Bunch of people have done this because you can basically make a rolling chassis.
Well, and you can get the bugs. C4 for really cheap.
Yeah.
They're really inexpensive nowadays.
Yeah. Well, relatively, until this really started popping up. That's true. Everybody's trying to build these things.
But people do that with everything. People do that with Miatas.
For sure. Yeah, the Miatas are cool. Like, have you ever seen the Miata hot rod?
I have not seen the Miata hot rod.
So there is a, and this isn't the one that I'm talking about.
I have seen that.
So somebody actually set like a Model A body on one of these things.
Okay, I haven't seen the Model A one. I've seen the other one that popped up though.
Yeah, man, that's really surprising that it's not coming up on here. So somebody set a Model A onto it. And this is cool because this is actually kind of ripping off one of my ideas. I really want to set a Willy's Jeep onto a new chassis, modern chassis. And somebody actually did do that. So let's do Model A.
Miata. See what pops up.
Model A body. Yeah, it might not work just because it's a hard thing to kind of search. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I don't think.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have a tough time trying to locate this. I've seen it done before. It was super cool, but let's not crash the inner balls trying to make this work. So as far as midlife crisis cars, I'm not sure because I still feel like maybe it's the fucking Corvette still.
Well, and maybe
I don't know.
Maybe it's not a car at all. Maybe it's just our life decisions of dumping God's amount of money into cars that are only worth $3,000 when you're done with them.
Just shit boxes.
Yeah, maybe my midlife crisis car is my BMW.
But you got to think like, okay, so midlife crisis cars, they aren't car guys necessarily.
That's true.
A shitload of them are non-car guys.
That
and that's
just
why
a sportier car to still feel young.
And that's why the generic idea is Corvette. Because even though the Corvette is a gnarly
car.
Because
our generation is going to be poor as fuck.
What's it going to be?
The Miata. It's the poor man's Corvette.
Maybe. I don't know. Okay, so we're now coming up on the midlife stage for the older of the group, right?
Yes, for you, yes.
And I can't speak for what... Like, I don't know what my midlife crisis car would be because I don't have any... I don't have any inclination to get anything different than what we're currently working on.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of want to build a hot rod. I want to build a Model A, but that's kind of the extent of it. And I don't represent that group necessarily.
Yeah, I have more projects I want to acquire. Not,
yeah.
Not just go out to the showroom floor and be like, here's 50 grand, give me something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I still want to build, a Bug. I want to build a Brat.
Right. Like, right.
I still want to build a Honda.
I almost wonder if it's going to be a Tesla. It doesn't have sports car all over it, no. But Teslas are like embarrassingly fast.
Speaking of Tesla, and this could be a midlife crisis car.
Mm-hmm.
There was an electric vehicle company that just released a car that's based off of the old Audi. Rally car. I can't remember what it's called.
Wait, are you saying that the Audi built the electric Coupe Quattro?
I don't think it was Audi that built it. It's a company that was inspired by the Coupe Quattro to build an electric vehicle that looks like it, and it's gorgeous. And if I was going to do a midlife crisis electric vehicle, that's probably what I would pick.
Yeah.
It's just a concept so far.
It's so hard to type with one hand.
Well, you can use two.
Oh, for God's sake. You see, okay, I'm not sure exactly how to search this thing. Okay, so our buddy shared this thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah, I know which one you're talking about. And I don't know why it's not coming up. We're just going to go Audi electric concept.
And see what pops up.
Yeah. Hopefully we get the thing because it's a bad motherfucker. They had a real image that came up. I mean that's pretty good. I don't know. I don't want us to have too much dead air here, just trying to fucking hunt down this photo. But
I don't think we're gonna be able to find it. We were a little unprepared.
Man, why are we just why are we running into so many issues just trying to fucking come up with a photo?
Yeah, it wasn't Audi who designed it though. It was. You know what? Don't do images. Search all, because it was a different manufacturer that came up with it.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, it wasn't Audi. It was another manufacturer that based their design off of the coupe.
So the how do I search it?
Audi electric coupe quattro concept. And then go under all instead of images and see if the article pops up with the manufacturer that was designing it. No.
This is making for really bad.
Okay. We should change topics then.
Yeah, okay.
So do you like dogs?
I like dogs. Yeah, okay. Oh, and here's the worst part is we're not even showing the people.
No, we're not.
Oh my God, guys, I'm sorry. This is why we're not making all the money with the podcast.
Yeah,
this why is we why don't we have as big of a reach.
This is why we still buy our own beer.
Yeah, that's true. Well, dude, I mean, we have been using the inner balls. Should we show the people the marketplace finds?
We should.
All right, so I'm gonna hop on over here again. Sorry, guys.
It's already loaded. Don't worry. It's not gonna be 5 minutes just blank.
Yeah, pretty much. So here we go.
That's so ugly. So as most of you probably know, all three of you, I have a soft spot for Brats. This is obviously not a Brat. This is a Plymouth Scamp, or was it Ramblers, the other model?
Rampage.
Rampage.
The Rampage.
The Rampage. They're both uglier than sin. I'm sorry.
Yeah, they're pretty rough.
They just don't have the right body lines.
Well, okay. Here's the issue. These are front-wheel drive.
Yeah, that too. We saw one in the cities years back. I don't know if you remember that or not.
Yeah, totally.
And
I know which one you're talking about. It was red.
Yes. God, they're so ugly.
Most of them are red. There's a few yellow ones.
I don't get how you
think there's black.
How the Ford Ranchero and the Brat, which are both small Utes.
Yeah.
And then they do, Chrysler does this crap. And how do you screw that up so badly?
It is odd. And Volkswagen did it too with the Caddy. So they did a Rabbit truck and they're called the Caddy.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I understand why they opted to do front wheel drive. Volkswagen makes a little more sense because they based it off of the Gulf. The Rampage, I don't know if that's based off of the Daytona or
maybe
I don't know what.
Yeah.
It's it's hideous.
They must have gotten drunk and had a sawzall and just like, we're going to cut this up. Oh, look what we did. Let's show the engineers and make it happen.
Well, I mean, part of the appeal in the original Ute concept is that they were always rear-wheel drive front engine.
Yep.
Obviously, Subaru had their take on it, which, in my opinion, Subaru's is like, it's either... If you look at it in one respect where you're like just purely utilitarian, it is better than the El Camino and the Ranchero.
Yeah,
The sake of like hauling stuff. Like it could have been bigger for the sake of hauling shit.
Yes, but it had a working 4x4 system in it.
Yeah, and when it came to like if you were going to use that thing in an environment that's like purely fun, it's probably a blast to take through some mud and whatever, right?
I think the Brett has a better storyline than the other ones. A lot of people don't know the reason why they have jump seats in the back is strictly to get around taxes. Because they had what's called the chicken tax. And if you imported a truck, there was a higher tax on it than passenger vehicles. So Subaru put seats in the back. I was like, it's not a truck. That's straight up a passenger car. What are you talking about? It's got 4 seats.
That's hilarious. And where does chicken come in?
That's just like the farmer's term for it. Because they're pickup trucks.
Huh.
And so the U.S. government was like, okay, you're right. Okay, it's got, what? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why they call it the chicken. I believe they call it the
chicken. Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure on that.
I mean, maybe it's not.
Or maybe it is. I'm pretty sure it's called the chicken tax.
Well, if the interwebs worked, I'd try to look it up for everybody.
But yeah, they put seats in the back of it to get around the taxes. And the government was like, you're not wrong. It does have 4 seats, so it could be a passenger vehicle. And it saved them God knows how much money on import tax.
All right, chicken tax for Wikipedia. The chicken tax is a 25-cent tariff on light trucks. And originally a potato starch, dextrin, and brandy imposed in 1964 by the United States. Lyndon Johnson fucking did this. Is placed by France and West Germany on the importation of U.S. chickens. That's so fucking stupid.
Well, it's a law. Dumb as hell.
Okay, so that makes a lot of sense. So yeah, what they're trying to do is circumvent that law by making seats in the back. Yeah. Well, that's kind of brilliant.
It's absolutely brilliant. Yeah. It's dumb as hell because you died if you rode in the back of them, but
a little dicey.
Yeah, it's still cool as hell.
So this one's a real pile of shit.
Oh yeah, fucking garbage. I don't know if they made out
floors.
Here's the thing: is it probably rolled off the assembly line that way.
Yeah, that was the best Dodge could do at the time. Yeah. No matter what, I've got a huge soft spot for the El Camino. I actually came across, and I probably should have saved it, but it's dangerous in my opinion for us to see too much of acquirable vehicles. That's so I came across a 60s, like early 60s? I think it might have been early 60s. What was the very first year of the El Camino?
Technically 58.
Okay, this might have been a 59.
I think that was like a split year.
Was 59. The 58 a single year?
It was kind of like the introductory year, split year. 59 had like the kind of the Corvette flares on the taillights.
Yeah.
And then in 60, they really revamped the entire body style.
Okay. This must have been more of like it looked like a Falcon. Falcon with a box.
Okay, so it was probably like a 63 or a 64 then.
Yeah, more than likely early 60s. Might have been like a 61, something like that. Right, but yeah, it basically looked like a Falcon. I remember. I think it was pretty cheap. I think it was like a grand or like $1,500 bucks
really
or something like
that. To me. I probably would just scoop it up.
Because, oh my God, it was so fucking cool. Yeah. So El Caminos for me, I grew up riding my grandfather's El Camino, and we use that thing like a truck. We'd have the dog in the back, and then we'd load up firewood, and we use it like we brought it up to the cabin, like that was what we did, and we fucking had a great time with it. And I've got all these fond memories because it was my grandpa's, and it was funny because it was like this V8 powered, rumbly, silly looking car with a box in the back of it, and I didn't think anything of it. I was like, oh, this is just a type of car. And come to find out, as I got a little bit older, it was like, oh, no, that's kind of a unique thing. That's a Ute.
Yeah.
It's not,
they
like,
don't really make those.
Super common. They stopped. They completely killed off the Utes, which is fucking crazy.
I don't get that.
They're so cool.
They
like,
killed
why
off
would
the
you
Ute,
stop?
And then they brought in mid-sized trucks.
Did they kill off the Ute? Was there ever a crossover where there was an S10 and the El Camino in the same year? There might have been in the 80s.
Maybe. Yeah, Chevy Love.
That's true. The Love was out in the 70s.
The Love, Datsun yeah. had the, was it 710 yeah. pickup? Mm-hmm. Datsun had their pickup.
Yeah.
V-Dub had the Caddy.
So there was definitely overlap, but I think you might be onto something where
the hard bodies.
I think that they had the Ford Courier, like they had 70s pickups, they're mini trucks. But so you might be onto something here where it's like those entry level small trucks might have ended up killing off the El Caminos, the Utes. Yeah,
I could definitely see that.
Yeah, which is kind of a shame. But I guess if you're looking at it from a manufacturer standpoint.
That's probably what killed off the Subaru Brat then, too, and the Volkswagen Caddies, is they were so small that for a little bit more, even the same price, you could get a Love.
Yeah. What was the last year of the Ute? Of the Brat.
Oh, good God. 91?
Mm-hmm.
I think 91, 92?
Okay.
I may have that wrong.
They only sold these in 4-packs of 12-ounce cans.
That's
kind of that kind of odd?
That's kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
It's really tasty.
That's a bummer, man.
Can't get drunk off of two beers.
Oh, you do. Well, I mean,
how am
you
I gonna,
can if
how
you're
am I gonna drive home?
110-pound white woman.
You're one of those.
You know it.
You're not 110.
Nicely done.
Yeah. just to make sure it's still working.
Yeah, man. Anyway, so there we go. We've got the Plymouth Scamp guaranteed to keep you a virgin.
Yes.
All right. So completely different. Here's something I found.
Yes. That's
what
awesome.
We have here is we have a 1993 fuselage an N328K fuselage.
So it doesn't have any wings.
No, it's just the fuselage.
What would you do? You could live out of that. That's
bro,
a tiny home, man.
Bro, exactly.
That's straight tiny home.
Exactly. Would, yeah. So okay, 12K in my opinion is a bit steep. And that's why it's still available, I think.
Not necessarily. If you think about it, the housing market right now is fucking nuts. We bought our place for like 143 and it's worth like 200K now because of how the housing market is.
Yeah.
So for 12 grand, you buy a plot of land for 20 grand. You're in it for about $30,000.
Plus, and you live in a fuselage
hell
for
yeah.
12K.
Yeah, you listen to, that song by David Bowie. Major Tom DeGround.
There it is.
And you get drunk and you sing that at the top of your fucking lungs every night before you go to bed. That's what you do with something like that.
So I don't know what the largest trailer houses are, but this motherfucker is 54 feet long. So I feel like that's decent.
Awesome.
But I guarantee it is not wider.
No.
Like I really doubt, because this is definitely not a three row one.
No, that's double wide seats.
Yeah, this
horses.
Is.
You could still do that. You're.
It's so badass.
It's got bathroom though. It's
for
already,
sure.
It's already got bathroom. You'd have to put in a shower.
Well, and here's the killer thing. Like, I mean, they've outfitted it. You know, they're working on it.
Like, ooh, okay, so a bed's gonna be really.
Oh
hard to
wow!
Do
that. Yeah, now that I'm looking at this thing, like it's a single row. So we're not talking. This ain't a 747.
So you're gonna
this thing is a private.
You're gonna have to have a bunk or something to utilize your space really well.
Mm-hmm.
But who cares? You live in a fucking plane. That's super cool.
This would be an amazing hunting shack.
Yeah, you could have 43 of your buddies each take a window.
Yeah, exactly. I know it's so goofy. When I saw this thing, I was like, we got to talk about this.
Okay,
it's
so
weird.
If you're not into hunting and you're not gonna turn it into a tiny home. What else would you do with it?
Well, and it's too long to turn it into anything that drives.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
You can't turn it into a vehicle. You can't turn it into like you could store motorcycles in it, I guess.
Yeah, it could be a storage thing, but yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me because it's almost strictly a
hunting shack.
A weird thing. It's like you could live in it kind of. I mean,
I think you could. If you were
you could convert it.
I mean, sometimes pictures don't really show the true nature or something. So
yeah.
you very well could put a bed and stuff in
okay,
there.
Okay, so
make it
for the listeners, if you don't have a visual, if you're not watching it on YouTube. What we have here is it's strictly the fuselage, meaning that it is the captain's room. What did they call it? The pilot's room?
Cockpit?
Whatever, the cockpit.
Yeah.
It had something to do with dicks. And then it's the passenger area, and that's it. Yeah. Right. Well, so we got no engines, no wings.
You do have the entire storage facility, like all the storage down below, too, where all the luggage goes.
Yeah.
So you do have a lot of space. It's just narrow.
Yeah, and I don't know how tall this thing is, but okay. So basically, we got like a big dildo. Like it's basically
it's
a
blue,
big dildo.
It's got some wheels.
Big, phallic shaped living quarter, yeah, if you want to call it a living quarter. So it's an odd, it's a very weird shape. Shitload of windows, which is cool.
Yeah.
You got a lot of nice like natural light. They
plastic,
definitely were.
So you just wipe the walls down.
It looks like they retrofitted onto the back of it. Air conditioning heating unit.
Yeah.
It looks like it's got something that's underway. Well, and it still has the running gear, which is cool.
That is super cool. Yeah, like I said, I think they were actually going to try to make a home out of it.
So based on it, they said, I wanted to convert it into a tiny home or camper, but there just isn't enough hours in the day. Which, okay, I translate that to you made the wrong decision.
You should have bought a bus.
Yeah, you should have bought the bus, or you should have bought
the storage
shipping crate or whatever. Yeah, you should have built it off of a trailer.
I still think that's doable. I just...
Well, if you want to live in something insane.
Yeah. Oh, well,
so if you,
I feel you and I are the kind of people that would live in something insane.
For sure.
Because there was a...
I look at that and I go, for sure I would do a
hunting
shack.
Thing, I think it was on Netflix. There was a TV series called like My Strange Homes or some shit like that. And this
nice.
Guy did. He lived in an airplane, but it wasn't one of these. It was like what you'd fly, you know, continental or to a different
sure.
country on.
Yeah, it's like a 747.
Yeah, well, it's got you know, four fucking rows and all that kind of shit.
Yeah.
That would be super easy to turn into.
Because you have room to make a hallway.
Exactly.
So
you can actually make rooms.
Yeah. Exactly.
This is just one big fucking room.
For sure.
That's all it is.
This is a better cabin. This is like, don't expect privacy. Like, you could do a bedroom at the back. So you could make it a one-bedroom kind of thing.
Yeah, you'd probably have to have a curtain to shut off the bedroom. And then just
you
open
could do
up.
Walls. I think that there's enough room to put, like, walls and a door.
Maybe?
I just don't
Maybe?
Think that there's... you can't make a hallway on the side.
Well, we should probably settle this by going and taking a look at this.
It is in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So
okay,
it's a haul.
If it was somewhat local, I would totally just...
Yeah, if this is an hour away, I would need to go see it.
Yeah, I would totally waste the guy's time and be like, we're really interested.
It's a chick and a fort deer. I don't know if I should say that on here. Yeah. Know, whatever. She's got it posted. So some lady owns this.
Some fucking hippie.
Some fucking... I don't know where she got this idea. It's cool.
It's a great idea. The execution, I think.
Here's what I dig. I love when people get creative about shit like this.
Oh, yeah.
The fucking psychopath who made his own submarine. That's fucking amazing. Right?
Yeah.
What was the other
yeah.
weird thing that we had found?
There's the Volkswagen tricycle. It was kind of weird.
This is crazy weird shit. Like, I love
Be
when
creative.
People try and do this. And nobody is sacrificing... a valuable item this way.
Yeah, it's not a rug.
You know, you're not chopping up like a 60s bug or something
yeah,
like that.
Oh, yeah,
yeah. Which I know people roll their eyes and they go, fucking valuable. Yeah, I would love to have a 1961 bug.
Yeah, you
I
know,
would.
They didn't take a 64 Continental and chop it up.
Oh, God, that'd be a heartbreaker.
Like, I've seen some of those shipping container homes where they stack, like, three or four of them, and they're so cool when they're done properly.
For sure.
Like, I would totally, if I didn't have kids, I would totally contemplate that.
Yeah. For the longest time, like, I planned on doing a house above a garage. Like, I wanted to build a all-one structure, big-ass garage in the bottom with, like, 12-foot ceilings and then, like, a big apartment/house on the top.
Have you,
three-bedroom.
Have you seen the meme that went around Facebook that says, like, the dude's perfect home? And it's, like, a 15-car garage, and then there's, like, a bathroom, a very small bedroom, and it just said living area.
Yeah.
It's super tiny. And that's exactly how a guy would live.
Oh,
at least,
for sure.
Guys like you and I who like to wrench and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think a lot of guys would love that. It's just, like, it isn't necessarily a garage, but it's, like, a play area. you know?
Well, and that could be grown-up children. That's all we are.
It could be like we're playing with adults that play with RC cars, guys that are into gaming. You'd make a massive epic gaming room.
If you're into Legos or robotics or something like that. Like you have a whole area to just
exactly
be creative.
You could be into rock climbing. You'd make your own indoor rock climbing. Dude, you could be a skateboarder, so you could make your own half pipe in there.
I did see a video of this kid that was big into rock climbing. His dad must have been too. And they built like a rock climbing wall inside their house that went like up the stairs and through the hallway and stuff. Like, that's really badass.
He probably had a very talented son.
That would be my
son
guess.
Or daughter.
And yeah. I have a feeling that dad, like, that was his hobby as well.
Oh, that's a good point. They're probably both rock climbers. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, you know, kids normally get into the same shit their parents do.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Well, and rock climbing's special in that, like, you could make a wall, and it doesn't have to be a vertical. In fact, it shouldn't be a strictly vertical wall. It should – context for the people that are watching. I actually used to rock climb a lot, and I was decent at it. I've climbed Palisade Head, which is a – I don't know if it's like 150 feet or 100 foot like rock wall that is on the face of Lake Superior. It was amazing. I am hanging off of a cliff up the North Shore with jagged rocks and the biggest freshwater lake in the world below me. Pretty badass. I'm hanging off the side of this motherfucker, climbing up it, feeling like king of the fucking world because I made it. I ascended it. I made it up to the top. Anyway, humble brag. So rock climbing, you can make DIY setups like super easy because basically what you need is a really good structure built behind it. So just like you're building a wall or you're building a house or whatever, you know, you build a structure behind it, make sure it's anchored really well. You've got to have adequate weight in the back so it's not going to like move forward.
It's gonna tip over on
you're going to have somebody hanging off of it. And then it's just plywood. You're just using like 3/4 inch plywood and you're running the anchors through this thing. And ideally, you know, you can hang a person off a 3/4 inch plywood, no problem.
Oh, yeah.
And you're drilling 1,000 holes. That's the big thing. You are drilling so many goddamn holes in that wall because what you want to be able to do is you drill the hole and then you've got like the anchor on the backside, so like a threaded insert from the backside of it. So you just take and you stick your handhold up there, you run your one big socket head fastener through the center of it, and then your handhold is attached right there. So it's super cool. You can just take like this wall here in the garage, I could slap a piece of plywood on that thing, have a threaded insert on the back of it, and we can make a little climbing wall right there.
We should make one for the kids.
I have one on the little playset, but that's obviously like a, you know, little
we should definitely make a climbing wall
thing
for the kids.
Yeah,
for sure. I would fucking love that.
The best part is when you actually make it tip backwards a little bit, so they're actually hanging off a little bit. It's super fun. I would. We'll talk about this off of the podcast, but
this will be another podcast.
If that's something you want to build for your kids, because you're already talking about expanding off of the garage, that might be you could make one of the walls
a climbing wall. I think they would love the crap out of that. Harper has tried. Roman hasn't got the chance yet because he's still a little too small to explore and try crazy things. Harper though. A couple years ago, we went to our family day through work, and it was down at Adventure Zone. And for those of you that don't know what that is, it's a indoor playground, essentially. They have arcade games, they have batting cages, they have laser tag, they don't have assholes shooting off fireworks.
fucking 4th
of
July.
And then there's Vertical Endeavors in there, which is a climbing specialty area. I mean, they all sorts of different skill levels and stuff. They have all the harnesses, all that fun jazz.
Yeah, I used to climb at VE. It's pretty cool. They've got both the normal climbing walls, and they've also got like a bouldering area, which bouldering is like hyper technical, short height kind of climbing, which is more than likely what you would have at your house.
Yeah, she got rid of the harness and all that, and she got a little scared. She made it about 10 feet off the ground, which I was super proud of her. I'm like, you went higher than you are height-wise. Like, that's super cool.
Yeah,
that's awesome. And then she looked down, and she was like, oh, shit.
Well, and when you're using an auto belay, so belaying is sort of pitching your body off of it going down. And a lot of times you're belaying yourself down, meaning that you're in charge of your speed, which you're going down with. And there's devices that cams, stuff like that, that attach to your belt. And so you pitch your way off of the wall and you kind of correct, you allow yourself to go down. We'll just put it that way. Auto belays are basically like, it's almost like a winch. You know, you're just jumping off of the wall and you're just like letting yourself fall.
She didn't,
but it only lets you drop a certain speed.
Yeah.
So it forces you to not go too far, but it's weight based. You know, sort of, it's sprung. So
when you're a little kid and you have no weight, you just kind of,
you have to be over 100 pounds for it to like bring you down.
Yeah.
And it's really funny.
Just hanging over their feet.
When you see somebody who's barely over the minimum weight threshold, it takes forever for them to come down. Or if you see a 300-pound dude come down, it's like, whoa, it goes pretty quick.
It's like tossing a bowling ball off a cliff.
Yeah, a little bit. But no, that's cool. Okay, so she couldn't get down with the auto belay, huh?
Yeah, not quite.
Did you guys have to like hook a rope to her and bring her down?
We were able to grab her foot. And
okay.
She wasn't super high up.
Was she climbing the area that has like the little castle, the little kids' wall portion?
It was, so if you walk back to Vertical Endeavors, it's the very first wall. Like as you're walking straight back, it's the first wall you see.
Yeah, that's like the little wall that has like a little fake castle thing on it and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, it goes up.
It's where you send most kids. It's the full height.
Yeah, it's the full height. And she tried twice and she made it about the same height each time, about that 10 to 15 foot
range.
That's
cool.
So it was cool, but. Yeah, she just wasn't quite having it. And I think some of it too is just the coordination of like how to get my hands and my feet to cooperate to actually lift myself up all the way.
Yeah.
Because she's gone and played at playgrounds now and she'll climb everything at the playground. And
she
won't be afraid of it now.
It's time to bring her back.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's something special. I mean, it's dangerous when you're climbing outside on
Earth. Yeah, but something like that.
But Duluth is really special in that our climbing scene is pretty amazing.
The rock quarry. I've gone. So the rock quarry. The rock quarry is exactly like it sounds. It's a quarry that they used to dig stuff out of and stuff, and it's just open now, and it's an outdoor playground essentially. They have hiking. They have mountain bike trails. They have anchors at the top of it, so if you want to rock climb, you can hook up all of your equipment. Mm-hmm. Disc golf is in there now. And what's cool is in the summertime, you'll see some people rock climbing. And then in the wintertime, all the snow and the ice on that freeze over the cliff, and people will ice climb. And they have the spiky shoes and the picks and all that. I don't know what to call it. I'm not a climber.
Yeah, yeah. So,
but it's really cool to witness.
They have all the typical gear. They still use the same anchors at the peak of it.
Yep.
But the difference is that, they're climbing and using cams on ice.
Yeah.
And they're using it with picks. It's pretty incredible. Duluth is wild. So people would ice climb up the North Shore. So they'd be climbing off the fucking face of Palisade, which is insane. You got to be out of your mind to do that shit. I haven't done that. I was okay at climbing. I wouldn't touch that. I was thinking about doing the quarry before I started having some hand issues. So I had to fucking back off.
Like too much alone time, hand issues. You're getting cramps.
So it's cool because
Gatorade?
Once you have rock climber hands, you kind of never lose it. So I've actually got really good hand strength. I used to have you'd look at my hands, you'd be like, damn.
Like, you like
they look kind of muscly.
You like the dude from The Big Hit where you're just constantly doing the hand.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
I can't think of the character's name.
Jerk off fan muscles. Mad jerk. But so like, what was I saying? Fucking rock climbing, ice climbing. I just never got into it. And the problem was, as you get better, you'd imagine, like, to somebody who doesn't climb, you'd think, oh, well, when it gets more challenging, it's like you're leaning back more, you're hanging off, you're doing more pull-ups and stuff like that. When that's not actually the case, what gets...
It's all legs, isn't it?
Well, no, what actually gets harder is the handholds get tiny. So we're talking you're using, like, these little teeny pebbles that are hanging off the wall that you're, like, putting a finger or two fingers on and locking your thumb over the top of it. And what that does is that fucking works your ligaments.
Jesus.
That works your tendons and ligaments. And you start feeling pops. And it's kind of scary because sometimes every once in a great while when you're watching people climb, they'll fall off the wall shrieking in pain because something got fucking overworked. Like, we're talking something like,
yeah, no thank you.
And that was a problem with my good buddy Justin as well, who I used to rock climb with a lot, is he started having some issues with his wrists too. It just, you reach a point where you're doing like 512s, which is like a really, like, your very good level of climbing, which I didn't touch that, but he was starting to hit that level. He's the guy that I went climbing up the North Shore with, but I'm doing 511Bs, 511Cs, which is just below that. And he's hitting like 512Bs, and it's nuts how good some people get. We're in 513s, 548. There are some incredibly right talented people that are up there, but we're talking like you're holding on to, and a lot of these motherfuckers are like 6 foot, 6 foot one, 6 foot two, where you've got some pretty wild reach, yeah. And that helps a lot.
Yeah, it makes it a little bit easier.
But the hardest part is like there's a plateau a lot of people hit, and that has to do with like your ability to grab like these little teeny pebbles hanging off the wall. It's fucking nuts. Let me tell you, dude, and this is going to be the last thing I'm going to talk about with rock climbing. So there's something really interesting. There's something. When it comes to male and female dynamics in sports, generally men tend to perform at a higher level with a lot of sports. We'll say
I'd say the majority of them, yes.
Because absolutely. It comes down to just this physical ability, men,
body size,
muscle,
all that fun jazz.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right. But there's other sports where women just blow men out of the water, where we're talking like gymnastics. Penis joke.
Yep.
There's something really fucking special about rock climbing in that.
I think it's the agility behind it.
So, okay, here's the difference.
More agile.
Yes and no. What's really special about rock climbing is that, like, men have a physical advantage in that. If you're a regular at a rock climbing gym, you'll watch new people coming in, and you'll know kind of what to expect. You'll see sort of the jockey type, like the big muscly dude, and you'll go, oh, he's going to do pull-ups the entire time he's here. Because what you want to do, like, your ultimate goal should be to rock climb with like 60, 70% legs, 80% legs. Do as much as you possibly can with your legs so that you can save your upper body strength and your forearm strength for when it gets technical and difficult. You can climb further and you can climb more the more you use your legs, because your natural inclination is to do a pull-up on
it. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know? Pull yourself up the wall. Yeah.
So you see these jocks come in and they fry themselves. They go in there and they just like muscle through something. And, you know, you'll see a football player, a college football player will come in there and he'll crank out a couple of like, we'll say entry level is a 5.6. They'll go in and they'll go straight to a 5.9 and they'll climb it. They'll ascend the fucker. They'll get down. They'll look real fucking tired. But they plateau at that point until they can eventually reach a point of technique. That takes a long time to get technique down. And we're talking technique is all about body position, leg strength, stuff like that. How you're stuffing your body into the wall and contorting to reach up to the next thing. And then
sounds like working
pushing
on the
off.
That I have to work on.
And you're like, you might have a handhold that's down here. And you'll actually take and you'll put your foot on the bottom side. And you'll pull up with your foot to give yourself more. Like, you'll pull up with your left foot. You'll hold something over here with your right hand. You'll push off with your right foot over here so that you can reach some little teeny thing that's up. It's cool. When rock climbing gets really technical, you're doing some funny positions and you're pushing and pulling at the same time. And what happens is those jocks, they just simply cannot do that. Because they're relying solely on just doing pull-ups the entire time,
yeah,
right?
They're
looking
strength.
For big things that you can grab onto and just pull up, right? Now, what I originally was talking about with the gender thing is that women, almost from the jump, don't have that upper body advantage. But what they do have is women tend to have stronger legs. Like, women tend to just build muscle with the legs really well. But because you don't have that upper body strength naturally, you're forced to learn technique faster.
I could see that.
So if you want to see some amazing technical ability on a rock climbing wall, go and watch the ladies climb. And it's funny because they're above you, and you're staring at butt, which you feel like a dirty motherfucker. But what you're also doing is you're learning a lot about technique from these ladies, because the ones that are really fucking talented are incredible with their technique and their ability to like kind of manage their body weight and stay planted against the wall. And, you know, because you'll have things that are kind of leaning backwards, and they're the ones who are like, you know, they're contorting their bodies backwards. They can tuck into the wall, and they're like rubbing like their hip up against the wall, so they've got a little bit of friction so that they can like take a hand off and reach up for the next hold. It's so damn cool, dude. So
that's super impressive.
Go home, YouTube rock climbing, and just like just see watch some of the best videos and watch some of the ladies. It's incredible, the technique.
Yeah, I'll definitely watch that.
Yeah, I don't know how we got on this topic.
I was talking about my kid.
Yeah.
She liked it.
And I think somewhere we started with garages. We were talking about the dude garages, and if you're a rock climber, you might build a rock wall. There we go. Holy shit, we traced it back.
Hey, look at that. Investigators.
Yeah, man.
So...
so what else do you want to talk about other than rock climbing?
Yeah, that's good shit. Well, why don't we wrap this thing up? I feel like if we don't have a good clear path after that, that might be a fun topic to end on.
I think
you got anything?
I'm tired and beat and ready for a long weekend.
Ladies and gentlemen, okay, so we got a really cool update on both projects.
Oh yeah, we probably should talk about, you know, what we've been working
on. Okay, so where we're at on the BMW.
Well, we rearranged the garage tonight because I couldn't find my crank pulley, which is very, very important.
Hilarious where it is, too.
So, yeah, it's in the back of the Honda Civic. Well, long story, I bought a truck. I had a daily, the Civic for a while. I had parts.
Donnie's got a Frontier now.
Yeah, I like it. I love it. I haven't used it for anything. I really want to haul something with it, and I haven't used it yet.
You'll get to, and you'll be like, oh, I feel good about this.
Oh, yeah.
You'll haul dirt. You'll haul dirt and you feel really good.
So my kids were acting up over the weekend, and we're like, okay, we just need to get out of the house. And it rained the day before, and there's that old service road out on Midway that like, we're going to go for a drive. And we went out there and put it in 4 high and just ripped around that. And the kids are just
through the mud.
They're just laughing and giggling, and they loved it. And the wife had a good time too. She thought it was pretty cool, and she was really impressed with how the four-wheel drive works and all that fun jazz. And then after that, we drove it up to the grocery store.
How bad was the mud out there?
It was pretty bad.
It was hairy.
It was very hairy.
Did you have your moment where you're just like, oh fuck, well, did I make the wrong decision?
No, the biggest issue was the ruts. So the truck wants to follow the ruts, and you could feel the back end slide on it. And the tires are good. It doesn't need tires, but they're not off-road specific tires.
Yeah, yeah. They're not like my 4Runner that has actual all-terrain.
Exactly. So
does yours have all-terrains, or are they just strictly street tires?
They're all-terrains, but they're very gentle all-terrains.
Oh, like, gotcha. Okay.
Like, I'm not going to drive through a swamp. But
they're not Geolanders or...
No. So that was a lot of fun. And just the fact that the kids were giggling as we're bouncing around and kind of lurking through this trail and all that kind of stuff. They thought it was fantastic. So I bought a truck. Haven't used it as a truck other than that. But the BMW has some parts in the Civic because I had to get them from your place when I was dailying the Civic. And we needed the crank pulley because the motor is now out of the car again. It is torn down completely other than the head off the block. And we're going to scrub it up, clean it, and reassemble everything. There's a couple of parts that have to get painted. And the engine bay is now painted and cleared and all that fun jazz. Looks 1,000 times better. It doesn't look new, but it really looks really, really good. And then the SR is ready to go back in, and it's going to stay in.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
It's close. I'm really close.
Yeah, we're on a hell of a time crunch. And
I get to miss out on going to Wisconsin Dells with the wife and kids because of it. And I'm a little bummed, but at the same time, a whole weekend to myself
for lots of reasons.
Exactly.
I'm gonna get some shit done.
Dude, I know. It's I'm it just when it comes garage. To like cranking out projects, just like having that unobstructed time, it's huge. But yeah, so okay, there is hope for Power Cruise. So we are currently a month out. We're a little over a month, 30 some days.
I'm hoping in the next couple weeks to at least turn the car over and see if it fires.
I think we're like 35 or 36 days out from like the absolute last day that things could be tinkered on.
Yes.
So that's rough. That's a very small window, especially when it comes to like you're wanting to test it a little bit first.
Oh yeah, I'd love to put it a same with the Ford on mine.
Yeah. So but there's hope. There is actually hope for this to pull off. So you're at a point where you gotta like get the motor back in after cleaning it, bolt everything together, get the fuel system hooked up, pour the fluids in.
Fuel system should be pretty straightforward. There's already hard lines ran forward with rubber hoses. I just simply have to get longer rubber hoses and run them to where they need to go. Swap out a fuel pump real quick, which, again, shouldn't be too complicated. And fuel should be done. And then at that point, I should be able to start it up. My intercooler piping still needs to get bead rolled, but that's kind of a minor thing. I can at least make sure.
You can drive it.
Exactly. Just not beat the shit out of it.
You can drive it. You can even hit boost. It's just that, like,
I might blow a pipe.
Well, the pipe might come off.
Yeah, I might blow a couple more than the thing.
Or you might just end up with a little bit of a leak. Like, where is it? Which one needs to be bead rolled?
All of them.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. So your biggest concern is going to be vacuum leak. Because that's going to fuck up the way that it drives. Like, a little bit of a boost leak just means you're just not going to make as much boost. Yeah. So that's not that big of a deal. And honestly, like, when you're kind of, you know, testing things out, it's not the end of the world if you're not really hitting a lot of boost.
Yeah, and even for Power Cruise, I didn't have the intentions to go beat the shit out of the car, you know?
Right.
I'm going to drive it there. I'm going to definitely go on the track and get on it a little bit. But
Turbo, some have said that the wastegate has set to like 12 PSI, which is a little bit more than they're meant to run from the factory. Yeah. So you actually might make a couple of ponies, but we'll see. You're still going to be under 300. You're probably going to be looking at, you know, like 220 horse or something like that, 240, which, whatever.
With 140 from the factory, it's gonna make me giggle.
It's going to be silly. So yeah, like that's the biggest thing. We just need to get it back together and have as much testing time as possible.
Yeah.
It's funny because like to get it driving, I don't have that much left. Okay. So on the Ford tonight actually was an exciting night for the Ford. I've been wiring this thing for a month and, maybe a month plus, maybe 2 months.
I think I'd say about 2 months, six weeks, give or take.
Just like heavy focus on wiring this thing.
Now, his wiring is different than my wiring. I just merged the SR harness to the BMW chassis harness, which we knocked out in actually a couple weeks.
Yes.
I think I had like two, maybe 2.5 weeks into it.
Wasn't bad.
But you're doing a full rewire.
Yeah.
Light, you know, headlight to tail light, completely all brand new, which takes time.
Here's the kicker. Not only was it's a full rewire, meaning every single circuit in this entire thing was rewired. So much so, even the cluster was completely rewired. So, and actually we're going to be doing a video or a video will be coming out on how I went about like restoring or cleaning up and converting to 12 volts. Cause that was, again, another thing that I did.
It's really
was on
just,
top of it. I converted it to 12 volts.
It's really just 5 minutes of him wiping dust out of it.
And it's still fucking dusty. I still have to take it apart again and clean it, but I'm going to do that later.
I still can't believe that. It was like somebody took a bag of dirt and just went like that.
It's crazy. This car for sure lived on a dirt road. But okay, so yeah, we'll have a video out on specifically that. I'll have a video out on how I did the taillights, which I added a third filament or a third light to the taillights, which that could be used as a turn signal. It could be used as a reverse light, whatever. So that will be out, but to give you an update on the car, the wiring is now done. Tonight was really exciting because we actually flipped the switch and plugged in fuses.
Nobody got shocked. There were no fires. No fuse. We didn't blow a fuse.
No, not a single fuse. Nothing. No problems.
Well, the
problems came down to figuring out what's going to work as a ground. Yes. So we had some grounding problems. Basically, I had a few inadequate grounds set up. So this was a little bit of a learning experience for me because I've never done a battery in the back with a full rewire. So when I rewired some Volkswagens in the past, and when I did that, the battery was up front. So running the grounds was super easy because it was just like, oh, battery to engine, battery to chassis.
Yep.
And it was a unibody car too. So it was like once you ran into the chassis, it was the entire car. Whereas with this one, you need to think about the body. You need to think about the chassis. You need to think about the engine.
Yeah. So a couple of grounds to fix. Had the passenger and driver side turn signals flip-flopped on accident.
Yeah, that was so funny. Well, and it's like okay, so when somebody says, like, you need the right-hand side, we'll call it a bushing or something like that for a suspension, right hand is from the driver's seat.
Oh, always.
Yeah.
Always.
So I mixed that up. And so we would have the turn signal working on the passenger rear and the driver's front, you know.
It's all flip-flop.
Yeah, it was. It was silly. So I had to rewire that part. But other than that, like, it worked out great. It was exciting. Like, we kind of got the grounds figured out. One of Speedway's plugs is a little questionable, like the connection quality.
Yeah, and that could be an orange from just messing with it a bunch of times. It could be on their end.
Yeah, I got to open it up. I got to pull that plug apart and just kind of check the connection and see why that is.
That'll tell you everything you need to know.
Yeah, it's kind of shitty. But more than likely, it's a connection, so it's probably just a matter of like putting a needle nose in there and maybe like biting down on a spade or something and just having a like hold the wire a little harder. But yeah, so that's the extent of it. Got the sniper figured out, which was some weird issue. And we had a little quirk with that, but we got it figured out, kicked that on, set up the wizard. So it's completely ready to go for the LS.
Did you go with Gandalf or Voldemort or
Gandalf for sure?
I can't remember. The other
I'm
dude.
Too old
Dumbledore.
Dumbledore's
the other
Fuzzy
one.
Potter.
Fuzzy Potter.
Fuzzy Potter. So we'll keep you guys updated. I've actually got some, I don't know, we'll either do social media posts just about the update of the builds, or maybe we'll throw together some little quick videos, some Road to the Power Cruise kind of things.
I like that idea.
So, you know, thanks for watching the videos. I know we haven't had a Dad Mods video out in a minute because, honestly, it's a lot of playing catch up.
We're just wrenching.
The Ford is caught up. The BMW is not caught up in the build series at all. But
it's at the point to start sharing the build series. But
it is crunch time on these things.
Yeah, so we're taking time off of work to get them done.
Yeah, we've had so little time. So sorry, guys. We would love if the videos were a little bit more up to date, but it's been a lot of work to try and keep up on this stuff. And the biggest thing is, like, we want these cars driving.
Yeah.
You know.
So we should probably stop talking and just go turn some wrenches and get some shit done.
No shit. Yeah. So, hey, thanks, guys, for tuning into another episode of the Brews of the Dudes podcast. We will see you next week, and hopefully we'll have some really great updates about where the cars are at.
Hopefully.
Mm-hmm. So bye. Thank you.
Adios.
Stay safe. Wherever.